Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. USDA released the Prospective Plantings Report, and the December corn futures made a new contract high. We'll take it all up today on this edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Our panelists in studio today are Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, Brian Stark of the Andersons here in Champaign County. Our guest will be Joe Prasaki, the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. He spent Thursday evening and Friday morning in lockup. Let's open the discussion with this question, gentlemen, and we'll start with you, Wayne Nelson. Saturday morning, or actually Friday morning, when you got up and looked at the numbers at 7:30 a.m. on the Prospective Plantings Report, what was your first reaction?
Well, after I got up from falling out of my chair, Todd, I thought, wow, I did not think anything of these numbers would be this way. I thought that the corn number was a lot lower and the bean number a lot higher than what we were all looking for. And, of course, that's why we had such a reactive day in the markets today and why we saw so much short covering the corn. There must have been a little bit indication of it earlier in the week because it was hard to buy calls in the corn pit. Every time I'd raise a bid, the offer would go a little bit higher. So some people had a little idea it was going to be this way.
And Brian, your make of the markets and those reports when you first saw them?
I would give similar sentiment to that. Pretty shocking. I think most people expected somewhere around the average trade guess, not as big a drop as we see in the corn. And I think that's going to lend a lot of support to the corn here in the planting season because, as you know, we won't have a final number now until the end of June. And so we're kind of trading based on what these numbers give us for the next couple of months. So I think that's definitely going to be supportive to corn and negative to beans.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they were released. Released from USDA at 7:30 a.m. Central Time, Friday morning, March the 31st. The Prospective Plantings Report at 78.019 million acres for corn. That's down from the 81.8 million acres that were put in the ground last year by U.S. farmers. Soybeans at 76.895 million acres, and that's up from the 72.1 million acres that USDA says farmers put in the ground last year. All wheat at 57.128, the winter wheat at 41.4. By the way, that compares to 40.433. The spring at 13.899, and that is in comparison and lower than the 14.036 that were planted last year. The durum wheat at 1.825 million acres, down from the 2.76 million acres that were put in the ground in 2005. So that's the set of numbers as they came out from USDA on the Prospective Plantings Report on Friday morning. And this is the way the market reacted throughout the week. But most of what you will hear here for the weekly trade happened on Friday in the corn pit. May futures a 243 high for the week, the low at 219.75. And the May settlement price was at $2.36. They were up 17.25 for the week. December corn at 268, up 16.5. We'll do the wheat as well. May futures 350.5. The high, the low at 338.5. May wheat settled at 347.75. They were up 5.5 cents from last week. July contract 361.5, up 7 from last week. You're at an elevator. Brian, did the phones start to ring this morning?
Oh, you bet, Todd. Guys were very shocked and taking advantage of the big up move in the market, as well they should. Guys that hadn't had anything locked in, this is a good apple opportunity to price some corn. A lot of them were very fearful. They may not have another opportunity to price any more beans. But for the most part, I think that this report will generally lend support to more selling as we move forward during the springtime.
December's corn settled at 268. It was up 16.5 for the week, and it bounced all the way up to 270 and made a new contract high. It always, or at least always, seems to do that almost always in the December contract. Disappointed that it didn't stay there?
Todd, I don't think we should be disappointed with this at all. I think it was a very strong close. You know, it leaves us – that does leave the top side open for us. We surely didn't sell off closing at 268. So technically, very strong close. A lot of people would have liked to have seen a close over 70, but I don't think we need it with the kind of numbers we saw to keep this market strong.
What were you telling producers as they called in their shock? Were they all bullish now with this corn market?
Well, I would probably say that 65 to 70% of the farmers now become even more bullish than they were. They were already bullish, Todd. They've been somewhat tight holders of this grain and still feeling that this crop was going to make it to 270. We didn't think it had happened today. We thought it might be down the road a little bit with some weather happenings, or either too wet or too dry, one of them along the way. But today definitely got us there in a big hurry, and it sure changed the technical picture. And, of course, this lower acreage – it does make weather a much more important item than it was a week ago when we were figuring out another two and a half million more acres.
Darrell Goode told us that the market's going to have to buy corn acres at some point. What's it going to take to put more corn acres in the ground, do you think?
Well, I think today was a good start. You know, it's pretty darn easy. Most people, if you put on anhydrous and stuff like that, it's hard to want to say that you want to go to beans with the expense that's already there. Most people have not put down bean herbicides, so it can be very easy if they feel like switching at this point in time. And we're not talking about just that the corn's going up. We're talking about when we put that added acreage on the beans. If you are not already hedged, if you aren't already priced, if you don't have some sort of revenue insurance sort of put on your crop there, it's going to be advantageous to possibly switch some acres from beans to corn.
Brian, did you hear from the central hedger in Maumee, Ohio today? Was the advice?
Well, I think he's the same thing. I think he was looking to have people price more grain, more corn, take advantage of the rally, especially the people that don't have anything on the books. And I also think that from the general sentiment in the pit that this is agreeing with Wayne, an ample opportunity to switch acreage over to corn if they haven't got any herbicide or set their acres over to beans. You may not see that as much in central Illinois. Most of the producers that we've talked to have already went corn heavy, but as we know in other areas of the country, it hasn't been as profitable as it has been in the past to look towards corn. So this may entice them to do that.
Are farmers further along in their marketing this year, you think, for corn than they have been in previous years?
I would say so. When you look at a $2.4 billion carryout, a lot of them that we've talked to were nervous about locking in some of these prices that they consider generous that the index funds have given us at the beginning of the year. It seems like every year more money is poured into the commodity markets at the beginning of each year, and I think they're trying to take advantage of that. When they look at the fundamentals, we have a possibility of increased ethanol demand, but that's a little bit down the road. So they've looked at, towards locking in some of these prices, and I would say over other years they're probably a little more heavily sold.
Wayne, I had Mike Zuzulo send me a set of numbers that he discussed with us on Friday afternoon during the closing mark report. Mike scheduled to be here for the Commodity Week programming taping, but had taken ill, so he was kind enough to send some numbers. They had done some number crunching. And Mike says that at 78.1 million acres with 145.6 bushel yield and a 10.8 demand, the carryout would be 1.65 billion. And he's looking maybe at an average cash price of 230 or better because of tight world stocks. Where are you looking at cash prices?
Well, I think that that's fairly close. I think that today probably raised the bar 15 to 20 cents as far as the corn goes along, Todd. And, of course, we could add some more weather premium back in if need be this summer. But I think just the lower acreage and the fear of some sort of weather event is going to raise what I would have considered where the high would have went, at least 15, if not 20 cents more.
You know, what happens if we have a weather event, for instance, like we did last year, even when we had a decent, actually a really quite good yield across the United States, given the drought conditions that were prevalent in a portion of the northern part of the state of Illinois and parts of Iowa as well. What would be the case if we planted 78 million acres and we dropped in a drought of sorts somewhere in the Midwest?
We'd say a three in front of the corn, Todd.
Not very far away, really.
No, not that far away. But, I mean, like I say, if that would be, we're going to add some weather premium. You know, will it be another 10, 20, or 30 cents more because of the weather? You know, we can't say here because we don't know how severe it's going to be. We know that the western corn, the Western Plains, you know, very dry here right now. We've got some rain out there, but not enough to help things along the way. We have some acreage out there switching over because of irrigation problems, the cost of natural gas for irrigation, things like that. And we do have some dry weather in the southeast also. So, you know, there's a little beginning, a little bit of urgency to talking about the weather, to being concerned about the weather. And the lower acreage, of course, just makes it a little tighter. If we had that extra 2 million acres that we thought we were going to have, well, then it isn't quite as tight if we lose a bushel here or there.
Brian, any cautionary tales that need to be told today as we look at a big drop, a 3.7 million acre drop in planted corn acres this year?
Well, I think the biggest caution is to not get over aggressive heading in after we've seen this number. Now we have something to largely consider that if we do have a weather scare, there is a potential for prices to significantly rally. We don't have as much leeway, as Wayne said, to really help us out as far as the ending stock to supply that demand. So I think the biggest caution is for producers to lock in some of these prices now, but at the same time reserve the right to hold on and see how the crop develops as we get into planting and the growing season.
Reviewing the numbers for the soybean, 76.895 million is the acreage set by USDA in their prospective plantings report released on Friday. 72.1 million is what was put in the ground last year, so that's up sharply from last year. And the beans settled the week like this. The May contract had a high of $5.89, a low at $5.70 3/4, and a settlement price 2 1/4 lower at $5.71 5. The November beans finished above $6 at $6.02 3/4. They were still off a half cent from last week. A big number, but the index funds don't seem to be willing to give up on the beans just yet.
No, they don't, Todd. We saw some tremendous buying in here. When you stop and you say that we were only down a little bit for the week, and we looked at the kind of increase in acreage that we looked at, and we were already looking at a tremendously huge carryout, and to be building on that and then put a couple million more acres on top of it, weather's not really important for the bean market that way. I was very surprised. You talk about being shocked at the numbers. I was shocked at how the beans opened. How they closed was more in line with that, I thought. The processors, or I know that Lawhoff and Danville was taking 10 cents protection before the open, and I thought that was being very kind and generous. And generally, they on a report like this, they'll pull clear out of the market until it opens, and they were actually buying beans at a 10-cent lower price than the day before. So very surprised. We're going to have some, you know, unless we cut back on this acreage, we're still going to have to just get bigger and bigger carryouts, and it's going to be hard to get these beans to rally at all.
Yeah, when a group like Lawhoff or any cash site, and Brian, maybe you can answer this question, what you guys taking away of protection this morning?
We took a dime protection on beans as well. I think the biggest reason why there wasn't more protection seen is because we had a general feeling that the corn market was going to open stronger than the traders had anticipated. I think the beginning call this morning was 5 to 6 higher, and you've seen that within the first 5 minutes of trade, we opened up 12 to 15 higher, and I think that's the main reason why beans didn't start out as low as they did. And the main reason why wheat didn't take as big a protection as maybe someone anticipate.
At what point do you unhook the price of corn from the price of beans in the mind of the buyer at the elevator?
I think as you see the beans go lower and the corn raise up as we move towards the growing season and see significant rallies, I think they have to take into account that fundamentally, I would say the information is more bearish to beans than it is bullish to corn right now. So what we've been advising is to look at marketing. If you have to choose one or the other, to look at locking in bean prices.
And speaking of that, on the bearish side of the beans, here's the numbers as Mike Zuzulo sent them to me. And I'll put these in our weekend newsletter. If you happen to be subscribed to that, you'll get them. If not, you can easily subscribe to the newsletter on our website at WILLAG.org. So here are the numbers, 76.9 million acres. That's what's been projected by USDA to be planted. He puts a 39.5 bushel yield on it, a 2.9 billion bushel demand with a carryout of 665. I think that's what that is currently at the moment. And he has an average cash price, and this is the one that you might sit up and take notice about, $4.45, with high world stocks pushing prices down. And he says, notice our yield estimate isn't very big, so we're trying to be conservative. and he's got a $4.45, a $4.50 bean market. Can you see that? And I guess I, what I really want to know is what you see in the marketplace over time, because the index funds just haven't given up. They call our dollar cost average into the market, it appears, and the cash market has stayed pretty steady with them.
Well, Todd, when we were selling crop insurance, we liked the grip policy in the beans this year because it's 6.19 as guarantee. We said we felt we could see 5.19 on the board by this fall, and we would have a claim just out of the simple fact of the price going down so much. So we were thinking that before this report at a dollar, possibly a dollar lower by this fall, this report takes at least another 25 cents out of it. So we could have a four in front of things, and depending on how wide the basis gets. I'm not quite as bearish as Mike is to that number, but this is a very bearish number.
How bearish from the Andersons' point of view?
I would say very bearish, because I think the one thing that people fail to realize right now is the demand factors that affect the beans. When you're talking about an increase of this magnitude in acreage, one of the main factors that's affected bean demand this year has been the fear of bird flu. And one of the reasons why China has backed out of the market, I think 6 months ago in fall, no one would anticipate the way China's appetite's been for beans the last 4 or 5 years, that the demand would slow and to a point where it's at right now. So I think the biggest thing, when you talk about the ending stock projections and possibly reduced demand, is a big, big fear for producers.
And what would happen, for instance, and they say this is not an if but a when, yeah, when bird flu were to hit U.S. shores. The poultry flock, for instance, is, I think, the largest. They eat more of the bean meal than any place else. So beans, I think, one out of every six soybeans goes into the poultry flock. I know they can drop those numbers drastically in minutes, moments, mm-hmm. hours. They can also put them back on in a couple of weeks, but it could be pretty disruptive, I would think, if bird flu were to come into the U.S. poultry flocks.
Yeah, I agree. I think if it does, I think a lot of the American poultry producers seem to think that they have an advantage over some of the European counterparts because of more sophisticated production styles. But I think any time it enters into the United States for the first time, it's going to have a very negative reaction on the floor.
Speaking of livestock, let's get into those numbers very quickly, and we'll talk more about the beans when we get to Joe Persaki here just a bit later. The numbers look like this. Live cattle, April contract, an $83 high this week, low at $79.15 at the Mercantile Exchange. They settled at $79.50. We're off to $97.50. New lead in the feeder cattle, the April contract, settling at $101.47.50, and the difference between the March Friday of last week's settlement to this week's April contract, down $1.97.50. Lean hogs April contract, a high this past week of $58.85. They're low at $56.90, and they settled $57.35. They were off $137.50 for the week. Hogs and pigs report was out on Friday afternoon. All hogs as of March 1st at 101, the average guess at 101.5. Kept for breeding at 101%, the average guess at 101% as well, and kept for marketing at 101%, the average guess there at 101.5. So it doesn't appear that those numbers will have a lot of an impact on Monday's trade.
Todd, you know, we saw that the cattle seeking to take a hit, last week's cattle on feed report, one of the highest placements ever. Corn, your feed costs going up, and beef backed up a little bit in the channels. We were assured today again, all hogs and pigs, 101 to 102% here along the way, right as expected. Big numbers, you know, a little bit lower there.
When we return, we'll talk with the chief of the crops branch at USDA, Joe Persaki.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Illinois weather went from winter-like chill to spring warmth in a matter of a couple of days this week. After starting out the week with highs only in the 40s, we ended up enjoying temperatures in the 70s by Thursday. This was due to a strong storm winding up over the plains and producing strong southerly winds across the Midwest. Temperatures this week averaged 2 to 4 degrees below normal despite the late week warm-up. Until Thursday night, precipitation this week was limited to some scattered showers the first part of the week. More substantial rainfall reached Illinois late Thursday. March precipitation will end up near to above normal across the entire state, with the largest positive departures in northwestern and southern Illinois. It appears a wet weather pattern will follow us into the month of April. The medium-range models are bringing rain-bearing weather systems through Illinois about every 3 to 4 days. After the next round of showers and thunderstorms move out on Monday, it looks like the next opportunity for significant rain will be Thursday and Friday. Temperatures will likely remain near to above normal. Normal highs for early April range from the low 50s north to the low 60s south, and those are generally in the 40s. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilbert.
Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Click on AM and then on Agriculture.
You're listening to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists are Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Brian Stark at the Andersons in Champaign County. On hand with us now from Washington, D.C., is the chief of the crops branch at USDA, Joe Prusaki. Good afternoon to you, Joe. Thanks for being with us. I hope you caught up on some of your sleep from overnight's lack of sleep in lockup.
Yeah, thank you, Todd. I had a little nap this afternoon.
All right, so the first question is, dude, what is up with that?
I tell you, you know, it's if you're surprised, imagine us looking at the data. We talked to 87,000 farmers in a sample, and this is what they're telling us. I mean, they're telling us that beans up, corn down, and that's the way it plays out. I know it came as a surprise.
What was the talk and chatter in lockup as you revealed these numbers to the folks that were there?
I think it's very much like our panelists. It's like when we go through the process in our states, you know, they'll work up the numbers and they send it in, and then we look at it from a national perspective, and it was just like, moly moly, this is going to be interesting, because it was not, you know, we were feeling, we hear the trade reports and stuff like that, you know, looking 2 million plus minus, you know, beans, corn, you know, kind of like that, but it's like, well, that's not what the numbers were showing us.
Which one are the, was it the corn number or the bean number or just both that surprised the devil out of everybody?
I just think both of them. Because it was like this, I think you guys might have mentioned it earlier in your discussion, it almost was a one-to-one swap for corn for beans pretty much in every state. You know, we plotted out, you know, on a map and look at it, and it's like, jeepers, they're going someplace, you know, going between corn and beans.
Joe, as you looked at things, and I don't know the statistics that you have, do they break down whether it's large farmers switching acres or small farmers or... And I know that Illinois was the state showing the largest switch between corn and beans. Where did the other the differences come up, or were they pretty much equal in the different states?
Well, let's see. Let me get to my little table here. But, you know, when we looked at it, you know, it's like you look like in Iowa, you know, it's down 300 in corn, up 300 in beans. Missouri down 300 corn, up 300 in beans. Indiana down 300 corn, up 500 in beans. Nebraska down 300 in corn, up 300 in beans. I mean, it was pretty much across the board, except North Dakota, which up big time in beans, up 1.2 million acres in beans. But they had a huge drop in, like, the oil seeds, canola, the durum wheat. I mean, so they're going big time beans. They had record yields up there last year, so they're going, you know, they're going that route.
As you discuss these numbers amongst the statisticians, were there things that you see in the numbers that really, I mean, other than North Dakota, which I guess we sort of heard about that last week as we talked with Chip Flory on this program. He talked about North Dakota potentially having a great number of bean acres switched in out of wheat, in fact. But were there things that you discussed amongst yourselves about what the impact might be over time?
Well, I mean, not the impact, but, you know, it's like yesterday, on the 30th, you know, our monthly ag prices report went out. And we were looking at, you know, the relationships between, you know, fuel last year versus this year, fertilizer last year versus this year. And then, you know, when we're looking at these crop numbers, you know, on corn and soybeans, it looks like, there's a big shift going on there. I mean, it looks like people are reacting to it. I mean, that's what we see, you know, looking at the, just looking at the raw data.
And so you're saying that the numbers from when you just put the numbers in place for fuel and fertilizer and those sorts of things, this would have been an expected.
Well, I think people expected, but the magnitude, I mean, that is what even surprised me, surprised the people on the staff. You know, is when the numbers start coming in, the first thing you ask, okay, is something wrong? And then you go back and you look through the data, and it looks, you know, it's right. Everything's right. You know, things balance out. Our acreage looks about, you know, the overall acreage looks right. And, you know, and that's one thing that we look at is that acreage balance sheet just to make sure everything is kind of in balance because, you know, people are not going to leave, you know, ground not tillable, you know, not tilled if they can put something in the ground.
With the increased usage of ethanol and the capacity in the U.S., does a 78 million acre crop in the ground cause any problems for domestic usage anywhere?
The chief economist asked that question this morning, and the World Board folks, Bill Turney from the World Board, answered that question. It says this is going to be a very interesting year. You know, it's going to be weather event driven on corn because if farmers don't shift back to corn, you know, because of seeing what's happening today, and it could be very tight. And that was their opinion at the World Board this morning.
What's the feeling in the same area, I guess, looking at soybeans with the big bump in acreage? Were you guys surprised considering the lack of demand we've seen this year that farmers would really consider overriding and continuing to bump their acreage up?
Yeah, I mean, it was surprising. I mean, I'll be honest with you. It was surprising, but again, I'm just thinking that, you know, we had record soybean yields in Iowa last year and very good yields in Minnesota. Illinois survived the drought with fairly decent bean yields, and I'm thinking, you know, it's like, okay, I'm thinking people put the pencil to paper and says, hey, with, you know, fertilizer being as high as it is, let's just go with beans. We saw something similar in North Dakota with, you know, with dry beans, and there's some, you know, anecdotal data talking about like the dryable peas and the lentils, you know, all legumes, you know, and putting those in rather than, you know, wheat and then, you know, high input crops.
One short question.
Joe, let's remind the folks, when was this survey taken?
It was conducted February 26th starting and finished about March 14th or so.
And very quickly, Joe, we've got 10 seconds for you. Is there a correlation between this report and the one that comes out in June?
There's some correlation, but not real strong because a lot of things can happen between now and June.
We appreciate it, Joe.
Okay, thanks, guys.
You too. Joe Prusaki is the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. A final, very quick word from our panelists. Wayne Nelson.
Well, some shocking numbers and some real opportunities. Let's stay fine-tuned to here and watch the weather very close.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Brian Stark is with the Andersons here in Champaign County.
Along the same lines as Wayne, I would continue to take advantage of price rallies in the corn and watch the weather.
We appreciate everybody being along with us for the ride. Of course, you can pick this program up off our website if you'd like at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a very good week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.